This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I believe it is episode 117. It has been a long week, but we got some good stuff done this week, so it's good. It's good. It's just a lot of stuff going on. Oh, and the other thing about this week is I'm a little friend deprived this week. I got together with my buddy on Friday, had a real nice breakfast with him, got together with my friends on Saturday, had a great breakfast with them. But my Tuesday buddy had already told me that he wouldn't be available, which is fine. And then my Wednesday buddy thought he could be available, but then he wasn't available, which is fine. And then my Thursday morning, this morning, his phone lost his charge, and so his alarm didn't go off, so I had breakfast by myself, which is fine. And then my Thursday buddy, he had a bunch of stuff come up today for work, and so he couldn't make it, so I'm going through a few little friend withdrawals, but that's okay. That's okay. We'll get together, and we'll get caught up, and everything will be cool. Right. I did have this topic I'm going to talk about today that I wanted to just run by them and get their impression on it, but I really haven't had a chance to do that because my buddy who I met with on Friday and on Saturday, I thought I was going a different direction today, and then as the week started in, I actually changed directions. And so the topic is a little new. I do have notes, and I have thought a little bit about it, but I don't feel like I'm nearly as well prepared as I could be had I had the opportunity to talk to my friends, which I did not. So anyways, we'll stumble through it and we'll go from there. Before we get to that, though, in other news, one of the interesting things this week was I was working on a personality test. I did not design it. It was designed in the Air Force. And it was brought from the Air Force to the major client that I work with, who happens to give a significant number of personality tests as they're screening individuals. And so they spend some amount of money on the standardized tests, and there is some expense involved, and so since this had been used successfully for the Air Force, they wanted to, it's just an ASP page, and then scoring and calculations on the backside. And the scoring and calculations turned out to be a little more complicated than I thought when I bid the job, but that's okay. We're gonna be fine, everything will be fine. But it's pretty interesting. So I finally got the whole thing up today, and actually ran through it myself, used myself as a test subject just to see what would happen. And the results pretty much turned out like I expected. Either I'm a really good test taker and liar, or things pretty much turned out like I expected. So I think I mentioned before that when I was reading the book on creativity, that I had taken the back in the test about creativity, how there were 7 different kinds of creativity, and you take this test to figure out which areas you're strongest in and which areas you're weakest in, and I was, for all the ones that I wanted to be strong in, I was pretty much strong across the board in all of those. Very, very close. It's always interesting. Pretty much the same thing held true for this. So, yay, that's good. So, just before I left work, we were working on, I think they're called bullet charts, where you have 4 quadrants in like a shooting target, 4 quadrants, and each quadrant represents a different type of personality for some aspect, leadership or character or wellness of being or attitudes and blah, 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 blah. So I was noticing on the quadrants that there was a bullseye right at the beginning. I just turned off the radio because it looked like it was on just low level. And when I was reading through the quadrants, I was discussing it with another programmer, and I said, you know, honestly, I'm not really sure that I want to be at the bullseye of these, because the person who's at this bullseye is pretty bland. He said, well, maybe that's just average. I said, oh, okay, I'll take that. And pretty much on those, every quadrant that I wanted to be in, I was in. So, hey. So, like I said, either I'm just, you know, a really good test taker who knows how to lie a lot, or things are pretty much what I think they are, which is kind of good. Anyway, so that was the first kind of interesting thing that happened this week. The second kind of interesting thing is I've been really trying to decide what to do with my time in the evenings at this point. Because I could be taking the Windows 7 phone application and moving it over to iPhone, and it would be good for me to learn iPhone doing that. That would be one possibility. Or I could just start writing again and saying, enough of this foolishness, let's just write. Or I have this idea for how to help authors get their books more well-known, and I've run it by several people, and they seem to think it's a good idea. You've always got the problem of how do we get above the ground noise, but and that would take some real focus. You know, but it would also help me get back into the whole web programming thing, because there are new tools, lots of new technologies, and I've been going through some tutorials, and I'm really impressed with some of the new technologies. MVC3, ASP.NET is pretty cool, and blah, 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 blah. So, in the middle of all this, I have a computer that crashes at home. Rats. Which I think the main hard drive just went bad, so I've got a replacement on order. It should be coming in tomorrow, and so I'll get it swapped out and reinstalled and all that kind of good stuff, which meant that was the machine I was doing all these investigations on, which means that I'll have to re-download a bunch of stuff, but that's fine. And I think everything that was important I had backed up, so I think we're good. But because of that, then a couple of nights ago, I thought, well, I can't do the programming stuff, so maybe I'll just hop back over and we'll take a look at Grumpy Old Prophets and we'll start putting that together. And, for those of you who don't know, Grumpy Old Prophets was it started out as a little drama piece that we added music to for a Christmas production when I was music minister at a local church here in town. When I was filling in as music minister for a local church here in town. And then I turned it into a little novella. So it is a fable for adults. It's a Christmas fable for adults. And basically, the idea is that if Moses and Elijah were around during Jesus, to meet Jesus during the Transfiguration, who's to say they weren't around earlier, and who's to say they didn't help a bit? So it's Moses and Elijah kind of doing the unseen Jedi Knight thing to help out the Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus, and to kind of run interference for them and those type of things. And so, and it's just cute. It's cute. It's got a little arc and story for Mary in it. It's just cute. And everybody seemed to really enjoy it. Well, if you're going to do one on the Christmas story, then obviously you got to do one on Easter. And if you're going to do a Christmas story and an Easter story, that's two, and people like trilogies, so you just might as well do one on the life of Christ. So I've started to kind of work through that and kind of shape that out a little bit. It was fun. I've enjoyed thinking about it. So this makes me think of writing again. In the midst of all that, then I get an email from my nephew-in-law, and he's been thinking of ways to help me market my books, get them out there. And one of the things he suggests is Audible, to hire some people to do an audiobook of my books. And, I mean, I know that hiring people to do an audiobook of my books is kind of expensive, so, but I thought, well, I'll go out and just see if I can self-publish, you know? Let's see. So I go out and I look around, and lo and behold, in mid-May, Audible has actually started a new thing where narrators can narrate their own books, submit them right to Audible, and they'll take them, and if they match all their guidelines. They will just upload them and you just work straight with Audible. You don't need a publisher to help you. You don't necessarily need a narrator if you can talk. As it turns out, I can talk. So, so I'm thinking, well, okay. Of course, now if I do this, I have to actually build a sound isolation booth in my house, and lo and behold, I actually have a spot that could be a sound isolation booth. We call it our hidey hole or our Frady hole. It's got concrete on three sides with a concrete above. I mean, it's pretty sound deadened in there. Now, there's a lot of reflection, so I'm going to have to get the sound dampening foam and blah, blah, blah. But being a sound guy at church, I have that capability, and I'd have to buy myself a microphone. I already have a Mac Mini. You know, I've got some of the pieces. So now I'm thinking about it. But I'm probably going to do this. I mean, when I look at the experience I've had in my life with all the different things I've done, I look at it and go, okay, you basically have all the pieces here. You could do this. And right now, there's not a ton of people who are doing this. Certainly there's a lot of publishers who are putting out Audible books and charging a lot of money for them, but in terms of the number of people who are self-publishing and self-narrating, there's not that many of them, which means there shouldn't be that many who are actually charging less, because they don't have to charge to hire a voiceover artist. They don't have to charge for a producer. They don't have to charge for the mastering. They don't have to charge for all those things. And so the potential is that I could maybe sneak in on the front edge of this type of thing, as opposed to waiting until everybody else hops on the bandwagon like I did with the Kindle low-price books. So, I may be doing that. We'll see. Anyways, so that's kind of the news from Lake Wobegon. Things going on in the brain, trying to figure out what to do next, enjoying life, yada yada. Last week, I started talking about the search for the true self. And I was talking about an article in the New York Times about the true self and how that traditionally, in philosophy, the true self was not that thing that you just ran after your impulses. Your true self was that which emerged when you used rational reflection and made decisions and said, you know, that may be fun, but I'm not doing it. And so we talked about this balance between, is your true self that which manifests when you rationally decide not to pursue a certain course because it makes best sense not to do that, or is your true self that which comes about when you're freed of all inhibitions, like when you're drunk and you just do whatever you want, then that's who you truly are. And I was going to follow on with some reflections from a book called The Heart and Soul of Change, which was really more about what works in therapy and what doesn't and why does it work. But then I stumbled across this article in the New York Times, and there's a whole series of really interesting articles that all center around homosexuality and religion and who am I really. You know, if I look at another man and I go, ooh, that's pretty good, does that automatically mean I'm homosexual and the only way I find fulfillment in life is if I come out of the closet? And there's been a whole series of, I feel like, really well-written articles, people from all different perspectives saying, well, this is what I think of that. And I think it's very interesting. And one of the articles that I was reading this past week was an article called Living the Good Lie. And it had some things in it that were fascinating. And the crux of it is that you have people on both sides of the homosexual argument, and by the homosexual argument, I mean I'm just born this way. The only way I'll find fulfillment is if I just go ahead and live out my life as a homosexual. That's one side of the argument. The other side of the argument is, you know, it's your choice, but that's the way to failure, and God says it's a sin, and you shouldn't be living as a homosexual. So those are kind of the two sides of the arguments. What's interesting is people on both sides of this argument, psychologists, psychiatrists, as they've been working with people who are dealing with homosexuality, or maybe not dealing, but feel like they are born to the homosexual mindset, or same-sex attractiveness is another word that's used for it, for people who don't necessarily want to have all the connotations that come along with saying that they're homosexual, that they're born with same-sex attractiveness. It's interesting because the people who are, it seems like to me, the people who are really interested in helping those who are counseling, they're sort of coming to a point in the center, specifically with the group of people who have grown up with a religious background and who have contended with these feelings of same-sex attractiveness, and who believe those feelings are in opposition to their religious beliefs, which they hold dear. And in fact, the article documents that there are practicing, stated, homosexual psychologists, psychiatrists, who have been very militant in the cause of pushing forth agendas for homosexual rights and all those types of things. But some of these have even come to the place that, you know, wait, time out. Slow down here a bit. If you've got somebody who has a deeply held religious belief that homosexuality is wrong, maybe they don't need to come out of the closet. Maybe we just need to find out what issues in their life are causing them anxiety and trouble, and see if we can deal with that, and then it's their choice whether they want to say, yes, I'm a homosexual, or, well, I have same-sex attractiveness issues, but I've chosen not to act on those. I've chosen instead to take a wife and have kids and father those kids and be a good husband. And it's all very interesting because some on one side will say, but those relationships will never be fulfilling, and eventually you'll just get divorced and look at all the lives you'll tear up. And then other people are saying, you know, that's not necessarily true. There's people who have lived their whole lives in this ambiguity and they've had very successful relationships. So what's interesting to me about all of this is that, you know, if we if we just back up a minute to what I was talking about last week, that in fact all of us physically are capable of giving pleasure and receiving pleasure pretty much from anyone and anything. And if we realize that, yes, as neurons get together and stuff, there's going to be different things that we're going to find attractive. But at the end of the day, we get to choose. I think that's a fundamental concept. I'm getting my mail. We get to choose. Oh, my wife must have already gotten the mail, or we didn't get any mail today. And I think there's also another fundamental concept if we're just narrowing down to talk about sexual attraction, getting married, being in relationships. Because Paul talks about the fact that some are made eunuchs, some choose to be eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom. And so here we have the idea that it doesn't matter really what your orientation or your sexual attractiveness quotient is. I'm backing into my garage, so I will start talking louder. It doesn't really matter what that is. There are some cases where you choose to make a commitment to certain principles, and so you choose not to act on those. Now, obviously, we've had some priests who have had certain sexual orientations and have chosen to make a commitment to certain principles and then didn't follow through with those commitments, but that's neither here nor there. There are people who have chosen to go down that path. I think one of the interesting things, and I just throw this out because I haven't worked my way all the way through it yet, but it seems to me that if you strip everything else away and you just start about talking about passion, sexual attraction, crushes, infatuations, all those types of things, that at the base of all those things is not really spirit. Because what's at the base of most of it? Now, I do think there is a true love and a true binding together of hearts. I do think there is that. But a lot of the flutters and the heart palpitations and the, you know, hormone releases and all those things that go along with infatuation and crushes and all those things, it's just flesh. It really is at the end of the day, because the flesh has convinced you that, oh, if you can just get that person, then your life is going to be wonderful, which, of course, it never is. Because you're looking for this external thing to give your life meaning and fulfillment, when really true meaning and fulfillment comes within. And so we have heterosexual couples getting together and then having arguments and getting divorced and one spouse going out and having affairs and the other spouse going out and having affairs. And we have all this tumult in this relationship. Because perhaps the only thing that brought them together in the first place was passion and crush and sexual intimacy, when what should have brought them together was a recognition that having this person in my life creates an environment of success for me, and me being in this person's life creates an environment of success for them. And then my attitude in that relationship is not, how often are we going to have sex? Or, you know, I just don't get a thrill anymore when I see you. My purpose for being in this relationship is, how do I create an environment of success for the other person? How can I serve them and love them and show them grace and mercy and help them to accomplish the things in their life that they would like to accomplish? And when you approach it from that angle, when you say the true purpose of relationship, of us getting together and forming a covenant together, is to explore this wonderful, wonderful epic of two people sharing their lives together, then the whole sexual attractiveness issue kind of pales, because I could be the type of person who was attracted to someone of the same sex, but that wouldn't stop me from being a loving and kind person to someone of the opposite sex and being in a relationship with them and growing to love them and honor them and help them create an environment of success for themselves. And that little scratchy thing in the distance is my phone going off. So I'll leave you to think about that. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.